What a pleasure to welcome to Star 97.7, May Pang. Beatles fans, John Lennon fans, listen up. May Pang is with us, and you can meet her this weekend in Southwest Harbor at the Signet Gallery, a photograph exhibition Friday and Saturday, noon to 7, Sunday from noon until 4, the Signet Gallery on Main Street in Southwest Harbor. May Pang, welcome to Maine.
Well, thank you. This is exciting. I've never been up this way.
You've never been this way before?
No, not at all.
No kidding. What are your first impressions of Maine?
You know, it's beautiful. It's relaxing. And it reminded me, as I was coming up, of the Hamptons in Long Island, you know, because I'm a New York girl. Mm-hmm. So I've never come up this far. So I'm excited. And I'm looking forward to my lobster roll.
I can tell you. A must.
Yes.
I love seafood. So this is great.
Well, we happen to have quite a bit of it, so
you let us know. I mean, I was on a boat once with, it sounds name-dropping, but when I was in Montauk, John and I stayed with this guy named Mick Jagger and his wife, Bianca, and we all went on a boat, a fishing boat, and we were fishing and everything, and it was the first time I ever had raw oysters and clams. It was so delicious.
Oh, man.
Well, the reason that you are here is your photo exhibition at the Signet Gallery, The Lost Weekend. This exhibition chronicles an incredible period of time. You've done so much with your life, but the world puts like a three-year part of your life under a microscope.
Absolutely.
The Lost Weekend. That must be kind of surreal to have so much emphasis put on that tiny portion of what you've done.
Well, they think that, you know, what they've read is what actually happened. And they read some of it, and it's part of, I guess, the media from back then. They put out some things, and it's partly correct, and then everybody else has their own spin to it, and now it gets spinned out of control.
Yeah.
You know, they have them down because, what was it, we went out with Harry Nilsson, and, you know, Nilsson's he likes to wind people up. And so, but the person that gets the most coverage, obviously, when you go out with him and you get thrown out of a club or something, is not going to be Harry Nilsson, but it's going to be John Lennon,
yeah,
because he's the bigger name. And John used to forget that. And they keep repeating the same incident over and over and over. So it sounded like our whole time together was one drunken party. And it wasn't anything like that. And we did not live out in L.A., which everybody thought that someone sent us out there. No, Yoko did not send us out there. She didn't even know we were out there for a while.
I just saw the documentary, The Lost Weekend, A Love Story. And Sonny, you saw it.
I did. And you know what struck me so much, May, was that you were so young. Here you are, like in your early 20s, and you're working with John and Yoko. And at one point, Yoko came to you and said, I want you to become John's companion. What was that like? What'd you think?
Well, you know, when she said, I think, you know, he's the first line out of her mouth was really, you know, we're not getting along. And I thought, oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. Meanwhile, if you're working around them, everybody knew. And so, you know, everybody in the house knew. And, you know, you tiptoe around all of this. And then she goes, you know, he's going to start seeing other people. And I'm thinking, oh, God, more people thrown into this mix. And next thing you know, she goes, well, you know, you don't have a boyfriend. And I went, wait a minute, did she just say me? Hold on, I'm not interested. I wanted her to know I'm not looking to be, you know, part of this circle. And she goes, oh, I know, but I think you'd be good for him. I said, no, you don't understand.
Oh.
I'm not interested. I know people would say, but it's John Lennon. I said, who cares? I worked for them for 3 years. I don't need to be part of this circle. I'm fine with just working, you know, for them, not, you know, be part of it.
But ultimately, you were good for him. What was that like?
You know, it was great. We were like two kids dating, enjoying each other's company. We had a lot in common, even though we're 10 years apart. We loved music. We shared the music scene. And we actually had the same taste in music. So it was quite interesting. And he would say, how come you know so much? And I said, because I would get this music firsthand. You got it later. And he said, you're right.
Did you suspect that when you and John did first get together, this was before, you know, you became romantic, did you suspect that that might happen? And were you surprised when you fell in love with John and when John fell in love with you?
I think, you know, we didn't know where it was going. We really, that in the first start. And we just took each day as it came along, and it just grew. And we cared for each other a lot more than we thought. I mean, people don't know, but Yoko actually asked for a divorce when she saw, and he said yes. Yes, I know. He did. He said yes, and because I remember him coming home, and he said, I'm going to be a free man in 6 months. And I just looked at him. I said, how are you feeling? I always wanted to know. I wanted him to be the one to make the decision, not somebody else making it for him. He says, I'm fine. We'll be fine.
But once he agreed to that, she wasn't, right?
Oh, no, she wasn't. She didn't expect that answer is really what came down.
Throughout your time with John, you took some incredible photographs of him. He took some wonderful photos of you. And a lot of these photos are part of your photo exhibition going on this weekend at the Signet Gallery, where people, and by the way, it is absolutely free. There's no admission charge. You can come, you see these incredible images, and you get to meet May, and she'll share stories with you. And all of these images are for sale. Could you describe some of the images that mean the most to you?
I think for me, you know, my favorite one that means the most is probably the one of him and Julian, a young Julian, because he hadn't seen his father in 3 years, and he was nervous. And so the first time we went out, we were out in Disneyland. We were out in L.A. So he came out with Cynthia, and that was tough, too, for John, because he hadn't seen Cynthia in years. Mm. And it was like he kept saying to me, I really wish she wasn't coming. And I turned to him and I said, you have no say in this. And he looked at me and I said, you haven't been there for him. He needed you. And so she's coming. She's the one that raised him.
That's probably part of why he loved you, because you told it to him like it was. Yeah. You and Cynthia were really close too, right?
Right. After that, I was there because I understood this kid needed, needed a father, and he had his mother, and now the mother also got a chance to finally have closure with John, which he never got when they broke up. So they were kept apart, and they finally had closure, and they talked it out. I knew she still cared a lot for John, but he had already moved on, and he told her, and it was to each other,
yeah,
you know, and that's important. The communication now was open, and that was important.
I loved seeing you and Julian together in your documentary, and people can see it on Amazon Prime. It's called The Lost Weekend, A Love Story. Highly recommended.
Yes.
And Julian is in this film with you, and you can see the love that he has for you, that you helped orchestrate this reunion. He and his mom came over. He got to be with his dad again. He got to watch his dad being a father. He got to go places. You took him to, I think, the Paramount lot at one point.
Oh, yeah. It was this was our first holiday. And, you know, John says, what am I going to do? I said, and he was just as nervous as I said. And I said, listen, I'll organize. I'll take care of everything. And it'll all be okay. And sure enough, I made sure everything went smoothly. They were, you know, in L.A., they were staying at the Beverly Hills Hotel. And we were staying, John and I were living at the at his lawyer's apartment in West Hollywood. And so organizing everything, we went to the Paramount lot. And we got in there and we were going through, and I know there are photos out there of us going on to the Happy Day set. And this was very early on because they were showing us what was happening, what was being filmed. And Happy Day said, just come on. You can see because the Fonz, Henry yeah. Winkler, was still did not have his leather jacket yet. He had he had his material red jacket on. And they were like in shock as we got on and watch everybody reading their lines and learning. It was like, yes, maybe the third or fourth episode they were on.
Wow.
And then we went around the lot. And what was great was John and I, we were all thrilled. And Cynthia was along with us, too. We went and we sat in for a whole, we were a complete episode and in the audience for The Odd Couple.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yes.
I've never heard that before.
Yes, we sat in the audience. It was so much fun. John was thrilled to be on, to be sitting in the audience like everybody else, and, you know.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So that's what we did. It was so much fun. We did, later on, we also went to the, during that same trip, we went to Warner Brothers lot. So we took the trolley. And there were other people on, and there was, we saw the how they made the, what was it, Ten Commandments, the water rushing, you know, that whole thing.
Wow.
And we were also on the lot, and it was funny, they were shooting, what's that, all of a sudden I can't remember, it was Bill Bixby, the magician.
Oh, yeah.
Remember? And
yeah.
So all of a sudden some guy was going, come on, over here, and he's looking at me, and I'm like, going where? Where am I going? And he thought I was part of one of the actors for the magician, and he was trying to hustle me into into the set. And I'm like, I said, I don't belong here. And it was great. We met Bill Bixby. He was a lovely man. But it was great. I was like, oh, this was one of my favorite shows back then, you know? So it was good.
One thing I don't understand, I've read so many Beatles books over the years, way too many probably, and most of them got the story wrong about you and John. There are a lot of myths that have been built up over the years about how the Lost Weekend began, when it began, what occurred during the Lost Weekend. What are some of the myths, or what is the most important thing that you wanted to set straight by telling your story?
Well,
full?
Yeah, you know, you're right. And that was one of the things, because people were hijacking my narrative and telling it.
And you lived it.
I lived it. And, you know, and I mean, even telling a simple story that was in my book originally way back when in 1983 came out, people did not believe I was with John. And they all wanted to give it as Yoko orchestrated. The only thing she did orchestrate was try to put us together. But what people have forgotten, that it's not one-sided here. You know, John wasn't really looking to go out. And I see stories about, oh, he was cheating. Yes, that happened the year before with, you know, that's something that that we all knew. And Yoko made sure, you know, she tells that story. And John paid for it. And he said, I'm sorry so many times, you know, and I saw that. But everybody who worked in the office knew it. And we all, you know, sat back.
Wow.
Because it's their situation.
Yeah.
And then when I got drawn into it, I only dealt with John on present day and future. And everybody would say to me, why didn't you tell him what was happening? Because I knew a lot from behind the scenes. And I wouldn't tell him because there was no sense in it. You have to bring somebody back and say, do you remember? That's not a good thing.
Right.
And everybody would have a different story then. So if you got to do whatever it is at that moment.
Yeah.
So I never told John what I really knew.
Wow.
You know, as a woman, I'm wondering, do you have a favorite memory with John? You were together so much more than I ever realized in the documentary.
Yeah.
And you've traveled all over the world. Do you have a favorite memory of your time together?
My time with John was probably when we spent at home in New York City, because that's where we really live. We didn't live in L.A. We were only there for the crazy projects that we might have come to. But, you know, with John was relaxing, and I saw him writing. You know, when he was with his son, those are the moments, and privately at home, it's great, you know, and we just laugh. He never thought he was funny. I mean, we had a lot of visitors. They would just show up at our door. I mean, they, unannounced. All of a sudden, our very first visitors was Paul and Linda. And we had just moved into the apartment, and I kept saying, it's Paul and Linda. How did they find out where we live? You know, we didn't tell anybody yet. So it was quite interesting. And they came around every time they were in New York. They came around. I was happy to see him with his brothers, as I would say, because that was really on the East Coast. It was George, Paul, and John. And on the West Coast, it was Ringo, Paul, and John. So And it was nice to see them talking, relating to one. There's no animosity. Everybody's like, oh, they were upset. They were not upset. They put that to the side. It was just about, we haven't seen each other. What's going on? What is your, you know, relationship to the next project? And I mean, in February, and this is the other thing that people have gotten wrong. John did not return after the Elton John concert to the Dakota. Didn't happen until the following year.
Was Thanksgiving 1974.
Right. And we still had Julian to come. We still had the signing of the breakup of the Beatles to come.
Okay.
And that was all done in December. And then in January, we did some other stuff. And Paul came by. He was one of our last visitors, you know, before we broke up. And it was great. But here's the thing. At that moment, he said, what are you guys doing? And he said, so Paul and Lynn said, oh, we're going down to New Orleans. And we're going to do a new album, which, of course, subsequently was the Venus and Mars. And in the end, John, after a day or so later, John says, what do you think? I said, what? I got to ask you this question. I said, what? He goes, what do you think if I wrote with Paul again? And I said, what? I my head turned like The Exorcist, you know. There's Linda Blair, you know. Yeah. And I said, what do you mean? I said, it'd be great. And he said, well, why? And I looked at him and I said, you know, solo, you guys are good. Together, it's special.
Yeah.
You were great. And he goes, yeah. And, wow. You know, and on my last day, I saw him, you know, before everything turned inside out. He said, let's book those tickets to down to New Orleans. He was excited because he wanted to go to New Orleans anyway. So
things could have been so much different. And we must have, it must be Yoko. She stopped him from going to New Orleans. Is that
well,
right?
Only the evidence will show you on that one. That's the fact. He never left.
Was she threatened by Paul? Did she feel threatened by Cynthia and Julian? Is that why she didn't want John to be around them?
I think in hindsight now, yes. Oh, absolutely. But I think people need to see the movie to see there's certain scenes which, if you remember, there's certain things that happen.
Yes.
So people need to see that.
And if you just joined us, the name of that movie, you can see it now on Amazon Prime and other streaming services.
Yeah, like The Lost, Apple. Yeah.
It's on Apple as well.
Yeah.
The Lost Weekend, a love story. Absolutely a fantastic documentary. And May Pang is here, and you can meet May this weekend at the Signet Gallery on Main Street, Southwest Harbor.
Yeah. And you know what? These pictures are all candid photos. These are not posed for any magazines. This is our home life. And I was just taking it for us.
Wow. Kind of a glimpse into your private life.
It was a glimpse into our private life. Exactly. And now you can purchase and take one of those prints home of John the way I saw him. And you can sit there and have a cup of coffee with him the way I saw him in the mornings.
Gosh.
You were with him during such a creative part of his life. And not enough has been written about that, about how, you know, yes, he did owe the record company a certain amount of albums, but you got to watch him work and be part of that. And you helped inspire some of that great work. The Mind Games album, Walls and Bridges, with his
number one hit record single.
Whatever gets you through the night.
And that one. And then, of course, Rock and Roll. We did a lot of work. In fact, we did more work in that time period that we were together than any other part of his solo career.
Speaking of Whatever Gets You Through the Night, which featured Elton John on backing vocals and piano, what do you remember about that night Elton came to the studio? What can you tell us about how that song came together?
Well, we had heard that, you know, well, the song was already, we were working on it. We were doing overdubs at that point. So that was the phase we were in. And we had heard he was in town. He wanted to drop by. And John said, great. And we had heard through other people that, you know, oh, he may want to do something if you ask him. And so when he came in, he heard the song we were working on, a few of them, and he said, he goes, can I put some stuff on there? And he goes, John goes, be my guest, absolutely. And he just went, he goes, just play it for me once through. And he goes, I got an idea. And then he just put it down. He just laid it down. He was quick.
Wow.
Yeah.
Talking with you off mic, I get the impression that you always loved photography, but you didn't really see how talented you were until John, right?
No, I didn't. I never thought about it. I just loved doing it. It was just my, it was my passion, mm-hmm. and I just saw people's looks, and you know, I just wanted to capture. It was not like nowadays with our iPhone where you just turn around and go, take a picture. Oh, don't like it. You know, delete. I couldn't do that. I would take photos, and I would. In fact, a couple of the shots, when you see them, I only took one shot. I didn't even know if I had the shot.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
Could you tell us about the night, and I forget exactly when it happened, but the night that you and John saw a UFO and he was so excited about that?
Yeah.
Yes, that night. We had just come back from the studio. It was a Friday night, and it was August 23rd. Came back. It was hot, muggy. You know, New York City, hot and muggy in August is not a great thing. And we lived in a very small apartment, maybe about 800 to 900 square feet. It's not big, really. And the best part about it is that we had a balcony, and the balcony faced the East River. And John loved it because he saw the ships go by, you know, so he would love to sit out there in the summertime and just sort of watch everything go. And it was getting dark, you know, and he says, oh, what should we eat? And I said, okay, pizza, make it easy. Great thing, delivery, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm going in there looking for something to wear for the, so you know, to get the delivery. And he's standing outside, and he smokes these French cigarettes, which I hated because they stink up the room.
Yeah.
And so he was very, you know, he's always remembering. So he goes outside and he would smoke outside on the balcony, and he was looking down river, and he said. And I heard him call out my name. And I'm going, oh, yeah, okay, fine. Doesn't sound important. It's all right. I'm just getting dressed here. And he's going, and he called me out a second time. And I heard the urgency. And I went, uh-oh, I think I better run over there, see what's going on. I ran. I said, what are you? And I stopped. And I said, what's that? He goes, you're seeing what I'm seeing. And I go, oh, my God. It's a effing UFO, and I'm screaming. I'm screaming to the top of my lungs. Not one soul anywhere came to the window. It was all black across the street. Not one soul. Nobody's there. My neighbor, he could have come out. He's not there. No one was there, and I'm screaming like a banshee. And I'm watching this thing. We could see the heat waves under this thing. We could see white lights going on and off around the rim and one solid red light on top. And you could see all the shimmering around it. Wow. And no noise. And I could hear the street noise down below, the cars going by, everything. But this thing that's sitting right over my head, maybe about three stories high. That's
oh
it. So it's not far from where I am. And I'm screaming and I'm watching it make all these unusual turns. You know, sideways, going up, going down, you know, and I'm like, and we're both going, and I'm watching it. I watched it for a good solid maybe 10 minutes because it slowed up, and then it sped up, and then it went sideways, and he said, oh, my God, it's flying. He goes, it's flying below rooftop here because we went around near the UN building, and we could just watch it. Now, if you came to me and I said I could point it out to you, but it had gone further down and you couldn't tell. I could hear the helicopters across the river, but I couldn't hear this thing right over my head ever.
Wow.
And I watched it, and it started to move. It sat over these buildings called the Waterside Tower and down on 23rd, and I kept my eye on it the whole time. And as it started to move, I'm yelling to John. I said, it's going towards Brooklyn. Who do we know? You know. And so as it went over the bridge, stopped over the bridge, and it's the Williamsburg Bridge, and stopped there for a second, and then it just went straight up. I just watched the light go straight up.
Oh, my God.
That's incredible. And he referenced that years later in the song Nobody Told Me, right?
Yeah, but he also wrote on the liner notes.
Oh, yeah.
And the Walls and Bridges liner, yeah. You know, I saw UFO at 9 o'clock on August 23rd. So that's coming up. August 23rd will be.
That's right.
Yeah, in 74. Yeah.
That's right. May, when you and John would go out, how approachable was he? If fans saw him on the street, did he like being approached?
He didn't mind it. With me, he didn't mind it. And, you know, like I always say, you know, whoever you're with in your relationship, it's everybody's different. With me, there was no problem. The only time he would get a little annoyed is that if he's putting food in his mouth and somebody's talking to you and he's trying to eat, then he would say, you know, and then I would step in, you know, and stop, you know, stop it.
You were on some of his albums, right? Your voice?
Yeah, I sang, and a lot of people, and this is why in the movie, and a lot of people didn't know, the number 9 dream, that is actually me whispering John's name. And I also sing background with John, Joey Dambra, and Laurie Burton. So the four of us are singing the chorus also.
Is that and the chorus is just some syllables that John liked the sound of, right?
Right. No, it came to him in a dream. He heard it in his head.
Oh, wow.
And then so he wrote it down.
Ah, bawa kawa.
That's all he heard. And he put that. And everybody's going, what does it mean? There's no meaning.
It's such a beautiful sound to number 9 dream. It's almost like, and I don't know if I should bring this name up because he makes an appearance in your documentary too, and it was kind of scary, Phil Spector. But it sounds almost like a Phil Spector wall of sound production. Was that intentional on John's part?
No, that was just him.
But he produced that, right?
What?
Number 9 Dream.
John did.
Yeah.
Yeah. John did the whole album. John produced it. He didn't need another producer, you know? Mm. So, you know, he could just sort of do it himself.
Yeah.
And so what it turned out was, here's a secret that not many people know, or a little inside info. If you listen to Harry Nilsson's album, Pussycat's album, that John produced, there's a song, Many Rivers to Cross, and you could hear the orchestral arrangement on the background. The background is something that John created.
Oh.
So when the album came out and it didn't go any further, John said, I can't leave my orchestral arrangements here. It's too good of a, you know, sound to leave here, melody-wise. So he took it back, and that's the song for number 9 Dream.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
My goodness. Wow. So you were talking earlier, and you said that when you guys were together with the rest of the Beatles, things were fine on the West Coast, on the East Coast. So the rumor has always been that Yoko was the one that broke them up. Yoko was the problem. Is that accurate?
Well, you know what? Since I wasn't there, I wouldn't be the one to say whether they broke it, you know, she broke them up or not. You know, I look at it like these guys, after a certain time, you know, it's come to an end to a certain degree. They needed to, brothers, you know, you need to take a break.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how far it would have done, I was different. You know, I come from, okay, let's take a break, and I would then regroup later. So, and that's basically where I was with all the guys. George was lovely to me, as the others were too. More George and Ringo. George said to me and John, and we hadn't seen him. I think John hadn't seen him in 3 years or so. And he turned around, about 3 years, and he said, he goes, I'm glad she's with you. And then he looked at me and he goes, I'm glad you're with him.
Nice.
And I was like, you know, and it was just one of those moments, you know, and you go, oh, okay.
And you knew what he meant by that.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
You knew exactly.
You were the anti-Yoko.
Well, yeah, yay!
And if only things had been different. Oh. If only you had stayed. I mean, I hate doing that what if game because it's a fruitless endeavor. Nobody knows what would have happened, but
nobody does.
You were very good for John.
Thank you. I mean, you know, I tried. I wanted him to be. We had our moments too, you know, up and down because he was so unsure. I mean, we had Yoko calling us so every single day. I know it said that he called her. It was the opposite. She called us every day from morning to night. So we got the first phone call was always her. I always knew that.
Wow.
So I used to pick up the phone. I go, hello. And I just hand it over after a while. Wow. You know, she would call us for no reason. I mean, it wasn't like as if there was an important thing. She knew that John was going to perform at Madison Square Garden with Elton because I told her. So everybody has forgotten. I didn't take drugs or drink. So I remember clearly what I did my part in here.
Yeah.
And so she had no idea that what was happening. I said, oh, you know, John's going to be performing. And someone said, why'd you tell her? I said, she's going to find out anyway. And she was going to want to go anyway. So what's the sense? So, what are we talking about? So I had, it was arranged. I told Tony King, I said, don't forget to give, get her the tickets, whatever she wanted. Because, of course, and so she called him immediately anyway. So she would say, I don't want to be too far forward, too far back, over here, over there. So she ended up on the 11th row sitting. Yes, and John, when John was back there, he goes, oh, I didn't know that Yoko was there. I didn't know she was coming. He knew. But he didn't know when she was going to arrive. That, because he was too busy doing his own thing. I was standing up, not many people knew, but I was actually standing on the side of the stage right behind Elton because he said, I want to be sure that you're, when I turn my head, that I can see you. I want to know because I know you're going to tell me if it sounds good or not.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Wow.
But it's hard for, I think, some Beatles fans to imagine this now, but you describe John in your film as being so incredibly nervous only because thought that the press and maybe some fans had kind of turned on him at that point, right, in 1974. And he was worried about that and very nervous about how he might be received at the concert.
Well, he hadn't been on stage. And, when you're, it's like anything. If you haven't been on for any length of time anywhere, you would think, oh, I don't think, I'm going to be well received. I haven't been around, haven't been playing. And, he was nervous like anybody else. And he was not confident in his singing voice or anything. And he was just having that album out and he was still nervous. People forget he was human. Yeah. And that's basically it. I mean, it's the same thing when you see these photos that I took of John. You wouldn't think why did it take so long? Scott found me and he kept asking after me for about 6 years. And I kept saying to him, listen, I don't think anybody's going to be interested in these photos.
Wow.
And because I've put them out before slowly here and there and people seen them and they go, it's okay. So you know what? When people say that, why would I think differently?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
They're beautiful photographs, and you were such an important part of John's life. I think every Beatles fan within the sound of our voice will want to be at the Signet Gallery this weekend, Friday and Saturday, noon to 7, Sunday, noon to 4. And they can actually get to meet you, May, right?
Yes, they can. They can come up and they meet me. We sell posters from my movie, a lot of people didn't even know I made a movie. I did. And it's truly a independent movie because I actually raised the money. We actually raised the money for this project. It was not done like with these big studio money. And because I know that somebody said, oh, we'll give some money in, but can we have a say in it? And the minute you do that, then the movie's not mine again. It's somebody else's. Right. It's not mine.
It looks like a big studio production, even if it isn't.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you what, I can't recommend highly enough. Download it, rent it, The Lost Weekend, A Love Story. It's eye-opening, and it's so beautiful. And I just kind of fell in love with you.
Thank you.
Watching it.
Thank you.
Oh, you were so good for John, you can tell. So I'm glad you were in his life.
And there are so many things that are corrected in this movie that we find out things in reality happen a little bit differently than what we read about in all of the books. And one of the revelations that you reveal is that when John did go back with Yoko in 1975, and John was raising Sean at that time, you continued to see him from time to time. Nobody mentions that. Nobody talks about that.
Because we kept really private to ourselves. And, it was one of those things that we were still in love with each other. And it was not as simple as, oh, yeah, he went back and that was it. It was much more in-depth for us. And we were trying to figure out certain things. And he was still trying to figure out where he was going. Wow. It wasn't as straightforward.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you spoke with him
In 1980, six months
before he passed away.
Yeah, I spoke to him. It was Memorial Weekend, to be exact, and he called me from South Africa. He called me, I never called him in all that time. He found out my number, and he would just call me, and at all different times. And then at one point, he said, are you okay? And, you know, can I come and see you? And I said, what's up? And I would always ask him, you know, people would always say, oh, you know, he was happy. If he's happy, why is he calling me?
Yeah.
And I could always feel that my conversations with him were always very personal. It would be like, have you seen Harold? That was his lawyer. Have you seen X, Y, and Z? You know, and I say, yes. And he goes, send them my love. Because obviously he wasn't seeing them. Yeah. He knew I did.
I'm just so fascinated. I'm so
well, I hope my you guys are going to be coming to the gallery.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yeah. I will definitely be there. I will definitely be there. The Signet Gallery on Main Street in Southwest Harbor, noon to 7, Friday and Saturday, 12 to 4 on Sunday. It is absolutely free. And you can meet May Pang. You could take some of these amazing prints home with you or a poster. And May, you are a delight. It is so great to have you here in Maine and at Star 97.7.
Oh, thank you. I mean, I'm thrilled to be here. And it's nice weather. It's great.
Yay! Oh, you came, you luck out.
You came at a perfect time.